Hey, it's Eric G. Around the House is sponsored by Baldwin Hardware. For 75 years, Baldwin Hardware has been known for its first-class quality and craftsmanship in door and cabinetry hardware. As an alumnus of the Baldwin Hardware Design Council, I can say I have seen the details and quality from design to the finished product. If you're looking for a new style and old-world craftsmanship, I can tell you there is only one Baldwin Hardware. Check out what would look great in your home at baldwinhardware.com.
Everybody stop what you're doing, please!
When it comes to remodeling and renovating your home, there is no better show on your radio. This is Around the House with Eric G.
Where's the hammer?
From your back fence to the sidewalk, Eric will tell you how to keep it all in tip-top shape while helping you save a buck while doing it. If you like DIY projects, it takes a lot of practice to get good at it, and Eric is here to guide the way.
Is it on the... Go up on the other floor. Somebody go up there and stop the hammering.
All that and more on the fastest 2 hours of home improvement radio.
These are the wrong plans. These are the old plans.
Oh. Welcome to...
Stop it! Stop
Around the House with Eric G.
Welcome to Around the House with Eric G. This is where we talk home improvement every single weekend. Thanks for joining us. I'm Eric G. Dane Vodder is out on assignment this week. I've got him doing some busy stuff for us right now that needs to be happening, so thanks for tuning in. We've got a full show today, so we've got a lot going on, and this is going to be a fun one. Here later on this hour, we're going to be talking to the Institute for Justice. These guys are great. What they're going to be doing is talking about a Seattle couple that basically they pulled some building permits to do some remodeling on their house, and the city of Seattle wants to hit them with a tax of $11,000 to help fund homelessness and low-income housing issues. So we're going to be talking with them about that. You know, constitutionally, it's a big problem, and it's one of those things as a homeowner, all of us should be concerned about. So we're going to be talking about that later on in the show. And then in the second hour of the show, we're going to have a lot of fun here as well. We're going to be talking with our friends over at Comcast. We're going to be talking about smart home stuff, and this is going to be a great deep dive into how to make smart homes work for you and how to set them up. So we've got a lot coming up on the show. Make sure you hit us up on Facebook, Around the House with Eric G. That's where you'll find that. And then we have Around the House Nation, and that is our closed group where we post up all the cool little pictures and projects that we're all working on. And the reason why it's a closed group is it's free first, but second of all, what it is it's actually a place that people can go in and we can actually moderate to make sure that everybody plays nice together. And that really helps, because if you're trying to do that on normal Facebook, it's really tough to be able to manage it that way. And that just leads to more problems, and we don't want to have people feel intimidated or bullied or anything like that. So it's a nice, good, safe place for everybody to go play. And that's Around the House Nation. So just head over to that, request to be a member of that, and we'll put you in as someone in there. Just make sure that you've got your profile locked up, you know, not too much, because we want to make sure that you're not a fake account, because we don't let those in. So we want to make sure you've got friends and it's not a brand new created account or anything like that. So if it looks fake, sorry, you're not going to get in, but 99.9% of the people that try to get in are let in. So feel free to head over there, and it's a great place to show your victories as well, the projects you're working on. And then make sure you call into the show. We would love to have your questions at 971-233-8992. That's 971-233-8992. And that's a great number. Call us 24/7 and we'll put you in the show. You know, that's a good way to do this. And then don't forget, on Wednesdays, noon Pacific, so 3 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to be doing a live Q&A on Facebook. Now, there will be 1 week here in August that we can't get to, just because, you know, it's I'll be on vacation, to be honest. I'll be out having a good time, so I won't be in front of a computer on that Wednesday, but we'll be out having a great time, and for everybody out there, we will only miss 1 week of that, and we'll come back and be doing our noon, or what I call our lunchtime happy hour, Q&A because you're either at lunch or at happy hour, depending on what side of the country you're on. Well, I wanted to talk about a list that I found here on the Spruce that is absolutely hilarious. And it's something I think is fitting here. 8 everyday things that are dirtier than a toilet. Right? I mean, isn't that kind of crazy? What are the 8 dirty things in your house that are worse than the toilet? You know what's number 8? Purses or backpacks. Because they always end up on a floor someplace. Maybe it's, if it's a backpack of your kids, it's on the classroom. Maybe it's a store, it's an office, it's, you know, bathrooms are common. How many people take those things and drop them off in a stall in a public restroom and ends up hitting there? Those things get to be brutally dirty. So make sure you're disinfecting those things from time to time. That way you've got a clean situation. Number 7. Pet toys and food bowls. I mean, think about it. All those bacteria. I mean, we clean our stuff all the time here with the pets, but it's one of those things that making sure you're doing that, and those toys can get bad as well. So throw those through the laundry when in doubt or clean them up, but just make sure that they're getting something back that is cleaner than what you put in there. So you don't need all if they're chewing on it. Maybe you don't need all the fabric softeners and that stuff on there, but just use it, get it clean, you know, and you'll have a healthier pet that way. Now, here's one of my pet peeves, and this is one of the ones that I've been talking about for a while because, you know, I live in the Portland, Oregon metro area, and when I'm living here, we've been using the reusable grocery bags for a long time. But how many times do those reusable grocery bags have leaky chicken or ground beef? Or maybe you grab some chemicals from the home improvement store to kill bugs or anything else, and then you put your fresh fruit and everything else in there. So you want to make sure that you're washing those every single week, especially during these times right now. Those reusable grocery bags, which aren't always used anywhere out there because there are some stores that won't let you use them right now due to COVID concerns. But make sure you wash the bags. And I would also have one bag that's meant for meats and that kind of stuff. Or if you're going to the home improvement store, make sure you got something for chemicals so you don't have any, you know, cross-contamination of those things as well. Now, here's one of the ones that I think is probably one of the worst offenders. Kitchen sponges. How many times do you grab that sponge and go, wow, that's ripe. That's not good. What that could be is when you smell that nastiness, that could be coliform bacteria, salmonella, E. coli, lurking inside that sponge. And then you go wipe everything down with it, you now just spread that bacteria everywhere. So you can do a couple things. You can zap the sponge in the microwave for a few minutes. That's not going to do it. That's what a lot of people do. That is one of those myths out there. What I do is boil them. Or I just run mine through the sanitize function on my dishwasher. That also will get it there hot enough to do it. But, in a good disinfectant, boiling water will take care of it as well. But just microwaving it, you're not getting it hot enough to do that. And that's one of those myths out there, like we talked about last week, that can be a huge problem. Now, another one of these, your cutting board. How many times do I see people cutting meat and chicken on wood cutting boards? Not a good idea because those juices are sucking into that. So that's why the wood cutting boards are great because you can use those for all your vegetables and stuff like that. But the problem is that if you're cutting any of those meats on that wood cutting board, you can get those things down into the grain of that. And then what happens? It's hard to get that clean again because many times the stuff that you're going to use to wash and disinfect that will kind of damage that wood as well. I mean, if you hit that with super hot soapy water, then you're going to be ruining that board and it's going to crack and fail prematurely. So you want to be able to keep it clean, but at the same time, you want to be able to do that. So in our household, we have plastic ones that are kind of that flexible plastic that goes on the countertop that work really well. And then I can throw those in the dishwasher and let them get sanitized through the sanitizing function, and now you've got a clean cutting board. So just be careful how you're doing that. Now, here's one of the worst ones out there, and here's why. Bathroom doorknobs in your house are something that should be cleaned at the same pace as what the bathroom is. So if you do a weekly deep dive clean into that bathroom, then maybe you should be doing those doorknobs and make sure that's it as well. Because think about how many times people sneeze or forget to wash their hands, or most importantly, don't wash their hands for long enough. And then what's the last thing you do is you touch the handle on the way out. Now, all of you people out there with commercial restrooms, I hope that you have paper towels in them. And here's my pet peeve of not having a trash can near the door. So when I leave, I can dry my hands off after washing my hands correctly. I go use that paper towel to open the door with the paper towel so my hands don't touch it. And then I can throw that in the trash can. And all the people out there, I hope you have that trash can near the door for people like me that go that way, because that way you've got it good to go. It's clean. You haven't recontaminated your hands before you even left the dang room, and you got it good to go that way. So that's a good one right there. Now, probably the one of the worst ones with all of us working at home is our remote controls or keyboards and mouse. So anytime that you touch that, that gets dirty. So make sure, just like your cell phone or anything else out there, that you're wiping down the keyboard, the remote control. There are, you can use a disinfectant wipe on those and wipe them down. They do make them for electronics. And I would hope you're doing these daily. And that way you've got that clean. When was the last time you cleaned your keyboard at home on your laptop or on your desktop? That's one of those that gets really bad. And of course, number one is your cell phone, because that gets hauled into the bathroom. So many people use that when they're out doing stuff, out running around. Maybe you're at the bar or restaurant, checking your phone, doing that stuff that we all do. Just make sure that you do it correctly. And again, they do make wipes that clean off electronics. So you don't have to worry about that are disinfectant wipes, and you're good to go with that. And that's something that's going to keep, you healthy and everything else. So don't forget to wipe down that cell phone at least once a day, keeping that clean. And then you'll be good to go and probably a little bit healthier as well. All right, more Around the House just as soon as we return.
Hey, everybody, it's JT from Barbecue Nation. If you're listening to Around the House, you can also hear Barbecue Nation on this platform. That's Barbecue Nation, where we talk about outdoor cooking and fun.
Every single weekend. Thanks for joining us. I've got Dane Vodder out on assignment today doing some projects for us. I am at the helm here flying solo today. I wanted to talk this segment here before we get at to our friends with Institute for Justice and these permitting issues that the Cherry families have been, and that's going to be up in the next segment. But I wanted to talk a little bit here in this segment about foundations. And do you have a cracked foundation? Maybe it's concrete, maybe it's brick. There are so many things you can do these days with new technology to repair those foundations. That doesn't mean that you have to jack the house up and replace it, because that's probably the most expensive way of doing it. What you really want to do is take a look around your house. So this time of year in the summertime is when you see a lot of things that contribute to foundations cracking. One of them is if you've got clay soil around your house and you're in a dry area. So, for instance, if you're living in an area that has a lot of clay in the soil and you don't water the lawn or the you have any kind of a sprinkler system out there for keeping that moisture in the ground. So if you let your lawn go white in the summertime because you don't get any rain, you notice that those cracks in the ground from the clay. So it looks like a desert floor, of an old lake bed where it gets those cracks and fissures. That's when that clay soil is contracting, almost like a kitchen sponge. And then what happens when it rains and you get water? Well, that expands out to its normal size again when there's water in it. So what happens is now you're expanding that back and forth, and that will create cracks in your foundation. Sometimes it'll be, around load-bearing areas, like maybe you've got foundation vents because you've got a crawl space. Or areas around that were weak points. Maybe it's a window, anything like that. So that's where you're going to get those. And many times, by just keeping that soil at a fairly regular moisture level, you stop that expansion and contraction on the outside. So what do you do if you've got a big crack? Well, let's talk about what a big crack is. Maybe it's a crack that maybe you can barely stick the corner of a credit card in that goes down. That's a small crack that goes down through the foundation. And the edges are fairly crisp. And the one thing with concrete is, you know, concrete always cracks. But what you got to be careful with is when you get a couple of these and they start moving through those cycles, what happens is now that crack becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. I've been to homes that I can stick my arm through in those cracks. Yes, my arm, where they had serious foundation problems. So at that point now, you're almost better off to be repouring part of that foundation. But for the smaller cracks, what you can do is go in there and repair those cracks. What's the best way to do it? Well, what you can do is, if they're not the big structural ones where you've got, you know, the house is sinking or things aren't moving anymore, maybe it had settled once and the house isn't moving anymore and you don't want to re-level things out. Because what happens is, if you want to re-level things out or keep it from moving anymore, that's when you got to go in and put helical piers and things like that in. And helical piers are these, you know, big stainless steel screws that are, you know, 6, 8, 10 inches round, and they go down into the ground, depending on what system you're looking at. They go into the ground down into bedrock and they tie off to the foundation. So the soil, doesn't matter if it's moving or not, that helps support that section of the house. So a regular crack, what I recommend usually is you go in and you go in there with a chipper and you kind of chip out the crack on both sides of the foundation and just get the loose stuff out of there. And then go in there with a cemental concrete repair, patch that up, and you make that into a thick mixture, kind of like what's in a softball. You're going to make it where you can make a ball out of it and make it as a nice tight ball. Shove that in there and then let that cure. Once that's cured in a couple hours, then you can go across it, and overnight if best, you can go over the top of it with a carbon fiber. And they make carbon fiber and epoxies that you can put across that area. And it will tie those things back together. Just like they make these little things that look like little tiny dumbbells. They're like a little thin epoxy bar with barrels on each end. And what you do is you can use those like staples. And so you grind out that section, you drill in enough so you can put those dumbbells in there, and you set that in the epoxy, and you're good to go. That ties those cracks back together, and now you've made that foundation one. And by doing that, it's not going to move around anymore. So you can go around and you know, I've seen, you know, years ago I worked with Western Construction Systems on foundations, and they did an amazing job of using carbon fiber. You would see large horizontal cracks, and I mean, going all the way across, and they're pushed in, you know, a couple inches where maybe there was a tree root, or one of the ones I saw, it was shocking, was somebody had a rain barrel system outside that had, you know, 1,500, 2,000 gallons in it, and it was busting the foundation because they put it too close to the house. And so you can go through there, one, if it's a water rain barrel system, move it away from the house so you're not putting any extra load on it, or get an arborist out there to see what that tree root is doing. But once you've done that, you can really go in there and use carbon fiber strips, or others. There's other systems too. There's another one out there that uses steel beams that you can go in there and hold up the house with, that also provides support up against that. There's multiple ways to skin that cat, but those are also ways that you can do without having to purchase the money to have to go in there and jack a house up, move out of it, dig out the foundation, and put a new one in. So use technology to your advantage when you're out doing these foundation repairs. And if you've got a water leak as well, that's the time to do it, because they can actually inject in a urethane foam that expands out and will also stop the leaks in those areas. So that'll be good. Well, coming up here this next segment, after this important message here, we're going to be talking with the Institute for Justice, because there is something that's going on that I think every homeowner needs to be aware of in case it happens in their city, because it's already happened in Seattle. And it's happening in real time now. And we want to make sure that everybody out there protects their property and stuff too, because nobody wants to have to pay a fee to remodel their house of $11,000. We'll talk about that just as soon as Around the House returns. To make a better day. Okay. Keep it locked inside. It'll get you down. Don't lose sight. Welcome back to Around the House with Eric G. This is where we talk home improvement every single weekend. Thanks for joining us. Right now, I've got a special guest on the phone. We've got Bill Maher from the Institute for Justice. Welcome to Around the House.
Oh, my pleasure. Great to be here.
Thanks, man. Well, you know, I saw a press release come out of you guys this last week, and, you know, I've, you know, full disclosure, worked with you guys years ago on trying to stop the state of Washington and the state of Oregon trying to do interior design legislation. So what happened is now I see that Seattle's housing affordability law and hardworking homeowners are having to pay for these crazy building permit fees. What's going on with that?
Sure. So we represent a couple, the Cherries, who made a terrible, terrible decision. They decided to buy a home in Seattle. And they wanted to, the home that they bought was built originally in 1916, and it's just simply not, it's not set up to be a 2020 house, and so it needs significant remodels. So they began to prepare for the remodeling. While they were doing that, Seattle passed its ironically named mandatory housing affordability law that attempts to force housing to be affordable. And the end result of the mandatory housing affordability law's application on the Cherries is that they cannot afford the house any longer. And the reason that is that under the MHA, if you are building a new structure, you have to either build, either pay money to the city, or you have to build a unit somewhere to basically provide housing for other people. And the Cherries initially thought, as one would do, is that if you're buying a house and you're renovating it, that's not a new structure.
Of course not, yeah.
But according to the Seattle Department of Construction and Inspection, because they are changing the quote envelope unquote of the house so much, they are essentially building a new structure. Now, they're not changing the use of it. It's a single occupancy home.
Yeah.
It has been a single occupancy home, they are. But the according to the SDCI, the Cherries are making enough changes to the envelope to turn it into an entirely different house, which is both inconsistent, I think, with the goal of the mandatory housing affordability law, and also creates significant constitutional and legal problems for the Cherries.
Yeah.
And the reason that it does is because in order to move into the house now, if the MHA applies, the Cherries would either have to build a new structure or they would have to pay the city of Seattle $11,000, which they simply do not have.
Sure.
And it's, I think, a reflection of how badly understood economics are by many city planners, that they can simply, you know, sort of declare that housing will be affordable. Essentially make it prohibitively expensive for people to live in specific affordable housing. So, you know, we've written a letter to the SDCI saying this renovation doesn't go under the MHA. It is outside of the scope and intent of the ordinance. But if it is within, if the SDCI decides that it is within the scope and intent of the ordinance, then that is what the U.S. Supreme Court calls an unconstitutional extraction. So many people are familiar here with the sort of impact fees. If you build a new house, you have to pay an impact fee for, you know, sewage or wear and tear on the roads or, you know, things that are connected to the use of your property. But the purpose of the MHA is to ultimately fix housing affordability. And the
so ironic.
Right. And the cherries, if they do the renovations, they're not making housing any less affordable in the city of Seattle. They're not having no impact whatsoever on housing affordability. And when you have that that clear disconnect between an impact fee or an exaction and what's actually happening, that comes down to what the Supreme Court calls outright extortion.
Yeah.
And essentially, you know, you, in order to exercise your property rights, in order to do what you want to do to your very own property, you have to pay us first. And that is unconstitutional, as well as I mentioned, not being under the either the terms of the MHA or its intent.
Well, Bill, I see two things here, too, as well, because I've designed and remodeled, as a designer, hundreds and hundreds of homes in city of Seattle proper, and a fair amount of them in Highland Park, so I know where they're at. And what's interesting is I can go in there as a designer, and we can take 90% of that house down to the foundation, and it's still considered a remodel to the building department when I get a building permit. But now you've got two different rules of what a remodel is and what's new construction, because you've got the building department saying, A, oh, that's a remodel. But now you've got this other agency saying, oh, but it's new construction because it's significant.
Well, I think part of it is that they're trying to move the mandatory housing authority into areas ordinance into areas that it was never intended to do, to reach. I think the idea was that if you move in and you move into Seattle and you build a building with high-end condos, you have to provide money to the city to provide low-income housing or build the low-income housing yourself. That in and of itself is constitutionally problematic. But the way that the city is interpreting here is basically saying that taking a house and keeping it a house somehow gives the city the ability to demand $11,000 from you.
Wow!
And that doesn't as we mentioned, this is kind of ironic, but this has nothing to help the affordability of housing. Already, housing in Seattle is extraordinarily expensive, and these kinds of ordinances do nothing to assist them. What makes housing affordable is that there's plenty of it. The more layers of complexity, the more difficulty you layer on in the ability to build and sustain housing, makes housing more and more expensive, regardless of how many times you attempt to mandate it otherwise. And, the University of Pennsylvania and Harvard have recently ranked Seattle as having the fourth most complex regulatory regime for housing in the nation. And, the city seems to think this is all attributable to, tech people and, to a certain extent, the idea that people who have a lot of money are moving in and building housing can drive up prices. But what we're talking about here is an unnecessary level of both trouble in building or hassle in building new housing. The level of uncertainty that if you do build housing, that you would ever be able to either economically stay in it or whether you would be able to ever get a return on your investment.
No kidding. I mean, that $11,000 fee is so counterintuitive to my economics 101 class I took in community college that it just blows my mind that that seems to be some kind of solution for housing when all you're doing is, I mean, this is a two, this is not some 10,000 square foot, you know, nine bedroom, nine bathroom house that they're working on here. They're trying to take a 1916 two bedroom fixer upper and make it their own house. And that to me is just wild that $11,000 out of the budget would have to go to, well, them holding them hostage over the building permit.
You know, and the Cherries are exactly the kind of people that Seattle says that they're concerned about losing, and that they're concerned about being driven out of the Seattle housing market. They're both veterans.
Mm-hmm.
They both work in areas where they contribute to their community. They're exactly the kind of people you want living in your town. And yet, in the name of affordability, Seattle is essentially driving them out by making their housing too expensive for them to live in.
Yeah, no kidding.
No kidding. Well, where do you see... Where do you see this going now? You guys have written a letter. Is that kind of where we're at now and the battle is just beginning?
Yes. I mean, we're waiting to hear back from the city as to whether they're going to take a reasonable stance on this and recognize that an ordinance entitled Mandatory Housing Affordability should not create housing problems for specific affordable housing, and you know, if that doesn't work, we'll take whatever avenues are legally available to us. But you know, the idea that you can basically force housing into being cheap by making it more expensive doesn't really make a whole lot of sense.
There's no logic there whatsoever. There's not. I'll make fun of them right here. That's insane to think that yeah, I mean, it's so counterintuitive to, I think, anybody's thought out there, especially when you're dealing with two homeowners. This isn't some mass company trying to build, 60 stories in the middle of somebody's residential neighborhood. These are two people trying to make their house better.
And, you know, and think about how expensive it would be if they weren't attempting to mandate affordability, how much the city would be charging them.
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely crazy. So, this is wilder than I even thought it was, just reading the, when you read the article off your guys' website, because I follow you guys on social media, and I was like, oh, that's in our backyard. We need to talk about the Cherries, because... this is something here that a lot of us need to help put some pressure on the city about, because this is we don't get into politics on this page, on this page of what we do here as far as Around the House with Eric G, but we also got to stand up for what's right as well without getting down that road. And this is one of those things that I think our listeners in the Seattle area need to start making some phone calls and get involved in this, because this is not going to get better unless some people push back.
Well, ultimately, this really isn't a political issue. It's an issue of basic understanding of economics, and it's also a recognition that people have constitutional rights, and you can't simply extort money for them for exercising what they're entitled to do.
Yeah, I mean, to me, in my book, that's no different than watching the movie Goodfellas and watching them pull up to the back dock and catching the weekly wage for protection. I mean, it's the same kind of thing in my book. It's just as crazy to have somebody making you buy them off to
get your permit.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, I think the important thing for your listeners within the within the people who do housing or care about housing is that this is not making housing less expensive. This is making housing more expensive. And it's making people less likely to want to invest in affordable housing in Seattle. And it's making it less likely that people who are either not the very rich or the very poor actually stay in the city.
And I think on top of it, as far as good affordable rentals and things like that out there, you're not going to see, you know, if you've got to pay an $11,000 fee to do some updates on a house because you're changing the envelope enough because you're maybe making it more energy efficient or you're doing whatever you're deciding to do to your home, if they're going to hit you with that, then you're going to see landlords not fixing up those things and you're going to see landlords going, I'm going to ride this thing out. I'm not going to pay that $11,000. So then they don't take care of projects that makes, you know, housing affordable and getting people into homes that are fit to be lived in.
Well, that's certainly been the case with things like rent control, is mm-hmm. that it creates a disincentive for people to actually invest in the housing that does exist. It creates a disincentive for people to actually build housing. And again, it's this idea that we can drive the price of housing down by mandating that it be inexpensive. Well, it's still going to be expensive. It's just going to be that the expense is going to be shifted to somebody else. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be, it's going to make it less likely that you'll see new construction, less likely that you will see repairs to existing buildings, and it'll be less likely that you'll see an increase in housing stock.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just so counterintuitive to what common sense says we should be going. Well, Bill, thanks for coming on here, and I'll keep an eye on the Institute for Justice here and keep me up to date on how this thing goes, because we're going to be following it on the show, because I'm curious to see how this plays out in the end with these guys.
Yeah, we will definitely do so. Like I said, we're hoping that the city makes the right decision and allows these folks to be able to become contributing members of Seattle's community.
And live in a house that's comfortable for their standards. That's the thing.
Yes.
All right. Thanks for coming on, and we'll talk again soon.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the first half of Around the House with Eric G. Show here on August 1st. Stay tuned. The second half of the show is coming up next. Thanks for listening to Around the House. It's Eric G from Around the House. Are you planning a decking or siding project this year? If you are, you've got to check out my friends at Millboard. Millboard is a completely different kind of composite decking and cladding that enhances outdoor spaces with enduring distinction. Hand molded from the finest oak, it realistically mimics the natural grain and color of premium hardwood. If you're looking for something that doesn't look like plastic and instead real wood, check out Millboard.com. Make sure and check out that interview we did just a few weeks back. That's Millboard.com.